morning is Parvati Corporation against Oak Forest. Mr. Wimmer.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's Ms. Wimmer. My name is Joni Ray Wimmer. I represent Parvati Corp. Oak Forest is a suburb in the south suburban metropolitan Chicago area. It's a predominantly white suburb, which is next to suburbs such as Markham and Country Club Hills, which are predominantly African American. Interstate 57 is kind of a rough de facto border, according to the city's comprehensive plan, between the predominantly minority suburbs to the south and east of I-57 and the predominantly white suburbs to the north and west. Parvati purchased property in Oak Forest in 1999 in the city's M zoning district. That zoning district at the time permitted highway-oriented commercial retail uses as determined by Oak Forest's Planning and Zoning Commission. And they constructed a 60-room hotel and began operating in 2001. And by 2003, the hotel was not producing the revenues that they had hoped for, so they hired Inland Real Estate and two brokers, one named Joe Esselman, another named Kevin List, to help market the property for them. And in November of 2003, Esselman and List met...
How would the presence of if this hotel were converted into a retirement home for the parishioners of this pastor, so presumably black, how would that alter the racial composition of Oak Forest?
Well, there'd be more African Americans living there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know percentage.
But how many? What's the population of Oak Forest?
I don't know enough that they would. I mean, it wouldn't have made a significant percentage difference.
Right. So why would they care? Anyway, it's on sort of the other side of the tracks. I-57 is the big dividing line, and the other side where the hotel is industrial. So why would anybody care if there were? I mean, you could see how they'd care from a liability standpoint. You don't want to have a lot of residential, you don't want to have residences proximate to machinery, obviously. But why would they care from a racial standpoint?
I mean, I-57 is just a rough border between the black and the white areas. Of course, racial discrimination is irrational. So when you say, why do they care? You know, why would anyone want to restrict black people from living in the city?
No, one understands discrimination. It's been very common, of course, in residential areas. But why would they care whether that there were a few black people in an industrial area which is separated by this huge highway from fancy parts of Oak Forest?
People used to care about when black people would go across the Dan Ryan Expressway when I was younger. People cared about it for some reason. It was the white area, and they didn't want them there. Well, that's not logical. I agree with you, Judge Posner.
There are no white people living in this industrial area. They're just factories.
Well,
or warehouses.
It was a commercial area, and there were white people living close by it. Esselman and List met with representatives of the CDD, the city's Community Development Department, which is their zoning department, the mayor and the city administrator in November of 2003 to see what uses the city would approve, and they specifically discussed converting to senior living. And Esselman left the meeting with the impression that the city would approve use of senior living there if they had an experienced buyer. You fast forward to June of 2004, my client had a buyer, Reverend J.C. Smith, who was the pastor of the Bethlehem Temple Missionary Baptist Church in Harvey on the other side of I-57. And he had over 500 members that were predominantly African American, and they met with the same people, McNeil Newquist to discuss this proposal. Now, at that time, there was nothing in the works at the city to amend the zoning ordinance. There were no documents that existed as of that meeting, the date of that meeting, suggesting that anything should be amended. There were no requests from developers asking for a change in the zoning ordinance, no memos talking about changing it, no documentation. But 2 weeks after the meeting, the CDD petitioned the Planning and Zoning Commission to enact what they called a comprehensive revision of the city's zoning ordinance. But the only change was to this M district, and it would have made it clear that the Reverend Senior Living Project was illegal. The very next day, the city published notice in the Daily Southtown, and they appeared to be in a hurry because they scheduled the hearing for 13 days after they published the notice, even though state law calls for a longer period. There were other indicia that indicated that they were in a hurry, which were really constituted departures from normal substance and procedure. The ordinance did away with the M district and created two new districts, M1 and M2, but they didn't map any zoning in the, what had formerly been the M district. They just didn't designate that whether it was M1, M2, or R1 or whatever. The ordinance listed only two or three uses in each district, and they said plus.
But if the zoning ordinance hadn't been changed, wouldn't this use of the hotel have been barred?
I think
because,
that.
Because under the previous ordinance, only a highway related hotel could be located there, right?
I think
this wasn't highway related. I mean, the senior home, the retirement home, would not be highway related.
I think that's a mixed issue of law and fact, Judge Posner, based on this record, because the prior ordinance said anything the Oak Forest Planning and Zoning Commission determined to be a highway commercial use was a permitted use in that district under the old law. No one had applied for senior living, but there's two factors that indicate that it's a reasonable probability that the city would have approved that, the city PZC would have approved that as a highway commercial use. One is, when they had the meeting with McNeil, the mayor, Newquist in June of 2003, and List said, how about senior living there? Nobody said to him, gee, no, that wouldn't be legal in that zone. Matter of fact, they gave him the impression that it would be approved.
When you say gave them the impression, that's so vague.
Well, you know, he went to the meeting. The purpose of the meeting was to see whether they would approve this use. I think he testified. I don't remember exactly what was said, but I do remember we wouldn't have worked as hard to market this
as
senior living.
Well, were the other people there deposed? Maybe they had better recollections.
We presented the evidence that exists on that issue.
But you could depose the other people at the meeting.
Well, some were deposed and some weren't, and the evidence is as it currently exists. The other thing, when the PZC got around to creating this Appendix A, which they didn't do for 3 years, they classified both extended stay hotels and community care facilities for the elderly as a permitted use in a B2 district, which they said was enacted to provide for general commercial activity, including what had traditionally been called highway commercial activities. So I think the question of whether the PZC would have... The other thing is, senior living, the PZC might have determined, look, we want senior living to be near a highway for access so that people can visit them from out of town, so that they can get to the hospital in a hurry if they're sick or whatever. It wouldn't have been an abuse of discretion for the Oak Forest PZC to determine that that was a permitted highway-oriented commercial use. And so it's a mixed question of law and fact at this point. The other thing, this ordinance listed certain...
Why didn't Reverend Jones follow up on the suggestion that the town would try to find another suitable place?
Reverend Smith. And
pardon?
It was Reverend Smith, Reverend Jones. And I think why he didn't, I He probably thought it was just they were just schmoozing him because he had had so much difficulty. I think that was what he testified. That's not in the record because the way it was set up in the party's Rule 56.1 statements, that didn't come out. But the point that I'm trying to make is if you're going to say that in the disgraceful discrimination case, the plaintiff can't even get to trial if the defendants tell him, look, you know, we'd love to have you apply for another position, or, gee, we'll help you if you want to look for something else, you're going to basically foreclose anyone from prevailing on a racial discrimination case, because that type of talk is something that they can always do. I'm out of my principal time, so unless there's any other questions, I'll sit down.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Ruberry.
Good morning, Justices. Patrick J. Ruberry appearing before the City of Oak Forest. This case arose basically because Parvati entered into a failed business, a business which failed miserably, and they were desperate to find a way out. And that way, according to them, was to somehow sell the property to someone so they could get out from under their mortgage and get out from under a huge debt. And toward that end, they hired, as Ms. Wimmer pointed out, a real estate broker. And I would like to emphasize that residential living, long-term residential living, never, ever was considered to be an approved use within the industrial district. It is an industrial district, an industrial park. By its very name, that shows that you don't want people living there. Anyone who's lived near, let's say out in the West Loop where they have the water market, anyone who's lived there will tell you at 4 in the morning you hear trucks pulling up to unload or load produce. That's noisy and loud. It's really not a nice place to live near, but people have their choices. Oak Forest decided to bring clarity and reason to its industrial park. That's what Mr. McNeil was doing back in the summer of 2004. The purpose was to make it clear to everyone which type of industries are approved in this part of the district and which type of industries or operations are approved in another type of district. That's all Mr. McNeil was doing. And what Parvati's attempt to do is say that, well, Mr. McNeil, on his own, decided to block Parvati's attempt to sell its property in Bethlehem by creating these M1, M2 districts. The trouble is, they've produced nothing, nothing in the way of testimony or evidence, which even remotely suggests that had the M classification remained in force, this particular project would have been approved. And they have searched high and low and long for any evidence which suggests that the decision-making process was in any way tainted by racial antipathy. And they have failed. They have failed utterly. When the case was in discovery, they tried to show that there were similarly situated individuals who got more favorable treatment. As you can see from their Rule 56 submissions, there's nothing in the way which even suggests the city afforded more favorable treatment to a similarly situated business owner or property owner. In other words, someone who wished to establish senior living or long-term residential care in the industrial park. It just isn't there because it just didn't happen. And Ms. Wimmer and Parvati can talk all they want about a so-called racial dividing line. I grew up there. I'm not aware of that racial dividing line. I have cousins who live east of that line. My aunts and uncles live east of that line. So if it exists, fine. I'm not aware of it. But anyone who has driven past this location can tell you that you can't find an area more unsuited for senior residential living. First of all, there are no sidewalks. That's something that Mr. McNeil pointed out back in April of 2005. Now, as a son of a woman who's 79 years old who's had a hip fracture, I can tell you sidewalks are important. Try walking around. If you're out east right now, try walking around all the snow if you're a senior without sidewalks. That would not be pretty. It'd be great if you opened an orthopedic practice, perhaps, to handle fractured hips. But there are no sidewalks. It's a hard place to get to. And now
when you say you have relatives living east of the highway, how far does Oak Forest extend past? So in other words, there's the industrial park, but then there are residential areas beyond that, east of that?
There are certainly commercial areas in Oak Forest there. Whether there might be a few residential pockets left over, because remember, Judge, this was farm country, and in fact, when I was going down to U of I, some of that area was still under being tilled. That was back in the late 70s, early 80s. So you'll find a house there, okay, and maybe someone's living there, or maybe it's an office for somebody, but there are residential pockets there, east of there.
And but there isn't major residential occupation east of the highway?
You know, Oak Forest itself, I don't know if there are some houses there, because Oak Forest, I believe, goes as far east as Crawford, a.k.a. Pulaski. So there are, but the area just south, 167th Street, just south of the hotel property, that you have, it's 167th Street, and there's a Wendy's there, there's a shopping mall, the Walmart, I believe, and a McDonald's on the south side of 167th Street. And there's also an old farmhouse there and a farm. So, you know, there are residential pockets there, but it appears to be primarily, from what I've seen, primarily commercial. And the linchpins of their case, after all this discovery, came down to a salesman's impression. Now, what that is, we don't know. As Judge Posner pointed out, what was it? I mean, were they nodding and smiling politely? You know, did they get up and cheer after the presentation and applaud? Say, I mean, we don't know. And they had every opportunity to fill that out, Judge, because remember, this is a refiled case. Mr. Esselman gave his deposition in the 06 filing. So when it was refiled, that impression of his was something they could have explored, and they didn't. And as far as I'm concerned, that impression is nothing more than a conclusion unsupported by specific facts. And not only that, you're talking about three people. They don't control, you know, whether the village will approve something or not. And the idea that, you know, the mayor approves something or believes that's going to happen, that's not necessarily the case, at least not in Oak Forest. So the whole premise of the case is faulty and flawed. And what it came down to is there's one meeting, supposedly they were inclined to support something, but that's based on what amounts to speculation. And under no circumstances it fall within Rule 701 exception that Judge Posner, you discussed in the Carescu case, that was the bribe case, you know, where basically a government witness is saying, you know, what this means. This fellow apparently was saying, a fellow who was convicted of bribing was saying, you know, I don't want to go over five beans or something, meaning I don't want to go over $5,000. I mean, that's what criminal operations do. Drug dealers do it all the time. They don't say bring five bags of heroin over. They say bring five bags of burritos over, because they figure somebody might be listening in. So that exception doesn't apply here. And what we have essentially is a theory in search of facts, and they never found any facts to support their theory. And what we have also are attempts to show that there were departures from normal procedures. But as Judge Saini pointed out, none of those departures, the fact they didn't do this or didn't do that, there's no way you could draw a racial animus from any of those activities or inactivities. It just isn't there. And as Judge Posner also pointed out, the city made a good faith offer to suggest alternative sites, because that's something the city wants, but they want it in the right place. The feeling that the city was, and it's clear, is that it's a good idea, but the wrong place for it. And Reverend Smith never took the city up on its on the city's offer. I took his deposition, and after six or seven pages of questions, he finally admitted that. But again, this case basically was properly dismissed because there is simply no evidence whatsoever. No evidence of any kind which would permit a reasonable trier of fact to conclude that the city's motivation for denying Parvati's Bethlehem's request for a business license was based on racial animus. It just isn't there. There are sound reasons the city offered as to why they opposed this project. And those reasons can in no way be considered pretextual. And Parvati didn't even try to do that. Unless there are any other questions, I would yield my time to my counsel for the individual defendants.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Ribéry. Ms. Knight.
Thank you. Good morning. Jody Knight on behalf of Defendants Jones, Dotson, and Newquist. I'll keep it short because we've already covered a lot of the issues in the prior argument. Essentially, as to the individual defendants, the burden is on plaintiff to provide circumstantial evidence from which a reasonable inference can be made of race discrimination. In this case, there's absolutely no factual evidence, circumstantial or otherwise, from which you'd make a reasonable evidence of discrimination. To quickly summarize the bases that the plaintiff sets forth in order to attempt to show race discrimination, it's that there was a meeting at which the representatives of the plaintiff themselves brought up the issue of race, which was never raised by any of the individual defendants. There was, in fact, a follow-up when Defendant Jones denied the business license, offering to help to find another location in the city for the project, which, as we discussed, was never followed up on. There was a question in the meeting about whether there was another alternate buyer. The only reasonable inference from that is that they were interested in a use on that property that was appropriate for the industrial area, that was not senior living, which the city obviously was not interested in having. Jones's denial, of course, was reviewed by the Planning and Zoning Commission, and he was not even a final decision maker on that denial. As to defendants Dotson and Newquist, the basis of the racial discrimination allegations is that they provided staff reports to the Planning and Zoning Commission, obviously a standard role for staff. As to the ordinance, Adam Dotson was not there when the ordinance was passed. Dave Newquist was a part-time employee, really a gopher, and had no power to make any decisions, racially motivated or otherwise, with regard to the zoning or the property. The plaintiff argues that the underlying zoning ordinance is flawed. We've already discussed that there's no basis in there that was anything having to do with race discrimination. The only motivation was that of the city in determining what uses are appropriate in an industrial area. And then the last thing pointed out by the plaintiff was that they observed that Pastor Smith was African-American. Again, there's nothing in there to indicate race discrimination. And so a summary of the alleged basis of the claims shows the weakness of plaintiff's argument. There's absolutely nothing in there from which you would make a reasonable inference that the decisions were based on race. And that's all I have, unless there's any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, counsel?
The Village of Arlington Heights versus Metropolitan Housing Development Corporation. Supreme Court indicated that a sudden change in zoning on the part of a municipality upon learning of a developer's plan to erect integrated housing is evidence of intentional discrimination. We have that here. They said in Arlington Heights, departures from normal procedural sequence might afford evidence that improper purposes are playing a role. We have that here. They said substantive departures, too, may be relevant on the racial discrimination question. We have that here. I mean, you have an ordinance that says we're going to permit this use, that use, and all uses in Appendix A, but there's no Appendix A. We have an ordinance that creates two zoning districts and doesn't map them. I mean, they proceeded with such alacrity to pass this zoning ordinance and create it that you would have thought they saw a ghost. But they didn't see a ghost. They saw an African-American pastor from the wrong side of I-57 that was going to put up a senior housing facility in their town. If you affirm racial discrimination, if you affirm the summary judgment in this case, there's really no plaintiff that's ever going to succeed in a racial discrimination in housing case based on the city's change in zoning. One day after the ordinance was signed, McNeil, met with Kevin Jarko of Willie Brothers to discuss the possibility of Willie Brothers moving into the Parvati property. We cited the case of Larimore that says an abrupt zoning change in policy upon learning of minority housing is substantial evidence that it's motivated by bias. That happened here. There was nothing. There was no plans to change the zoning of the city until they met J.C. Smith, and they had a so-called comprehensive change within 6 weeks that was riddled with errors because they did it so quickly. I have a couple more minutes with respect to Jones. Jones was the person who initially turned down the application. He had an ordinance that didn't designate the property as M1 or M2. He denied the application based on that ordinance after concluding that it was M2, even though there was no basis to believe it was M2. At a meeting while the appeal was pending, it wasn't my clients that brought up race. It was Galloway, according to my client's testimony, who was a lobbyist hired by Amrish Mahajan, the lender for Parvati, was comparing the racial composition of Bethlehem's proposed senior living project to the hotel because presumably Galloway thought that was relevant to the city people. And it was at that point Jones turns to Parvati and says, do you have another buyer? I mean, what's wrong with the buyer that they had? I mean, this court has said ambiguous statements is one of the things, in addition to suspicious timing, that can support a racial discrimination claim. I mean, that's a pretty loaded statement. Do you have another buyer? Does that mean my time's up? I got one more minute. Okay. With respect to the due process claim, you have a zoning ordinance here that it creates a bunch of uses and doesn't tell anybody where they are. It doesn't map them. And we cited numerous cases that said that that was a violation of due process. The city did not shift the burden on the issue of whether we have sufficient evidence of damages. We cited to the court a case.
Has Smith brought a discrimination suit?
Bethlehem was a party to this case initially, and he ran out of money and wanted to lick his wounds and go away. Mm-hmm. So it was dismissed with prejudice with respect to Bethlehem Enterprise in June of 2008. Logan versus Continental Commercial Union Insurance Company is the case we cited.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case will be taken under advisement. If you're